immune system places so much importance on protection of us through the digestive system that 70% of the immune system resides in our digestive system. 70% of the immune system. That's how important protecting us from what we eat nature places on our digestive system.
Dr. Arden Anderson is a physician and a farmer. He has married the two worlds together so that he can deliver a message of hope for people who are trying to prevent disease or trying to help themselves get well. Essentially, if we can get healthy food, we can be healthy. So what he's trying to teach us is that our farm is indeed our pharmacy.
The wizards in genetics are kind enough to propose a lot of reasons why I should believe in GMOs. It's not that I don't trust them, and I don't mean to be rude, but I still want the list of ingredients that they're putting in my food. I want to know, I want to know. 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 They say it's to protect me, but the label never shows how many generations will be born with extra toes. It will take many years of tests to get the final scores. By then we'll look like the creatures in the bar scene of Star Wars. I want to know, I want to know.
Okay, I'm going to bend down now, take my shoe off, and count my toes. One, two, three, four, five. Five on that foot, five on that foot. Extra toes. Oh, yes, there are all kinds of allegations about GMOs. Good morning, London, and we're delighted you've joined us this morning. This is our regular health segment. Along with me this morning, of course, our nutritional consultant, Pam Colleen. Do you think that GMOs lead to extra toes?
We'll see in another two generations, maybe. Who knows? We're seeing already people connecting the dots in terms of getting reactions, like eating tortilla chips, for example, and having really severe allergic reactions and tracing that back to GMOs potentially. There's also studies to show that there's a link between these genetically modified organisms and cancer and so on, reproductive difficulties. There's all sorts of questions surrounding these foods.
Well, before we get to the really rough stuff, let's introduce our very special guest this morning. He's a farm kid, so I want to talk about farming for just a moment. Pam, would you introduce Dr.
Arden Anderson, a physician and a farmer, and he's an author as well. He's written a few books. One of them is called Real Medicine, Real Health, and a recent book that he published last year is called Food Plague. Could Our Daily Bread Be Our Most Life-Threatening Exposure? Interesting title.
Wow, no kidding. Food Plague. Could Our Daily Bread Be Our Most Life-Threatening Exposure? We have so much to talk about, and folks, you're welcome to join us, 643-1290, but let's welcome to London, Ontario, Dr. Arden Anderson. Good morning, Doctor.
Well, good morning, both of you. Thank you very much for having me on here. It's a beautiful day.
Well, hey, you're a farm kid and I'm a farm kid, so let's talk being a farm kid for just a moment. What was your favorite smell out on the farm?
Springtime and harvest time.
Mine was fresh cut hay.
Hmm. Oh, yes.
Fresh cut hay. What was your least favorite smell on the farm?
The dirty calf pens, because I had to clean all of them.
Okay. What was your favorite tractor?
Oh, what was the favorite tractor?
Was it green and yellow? I'm just giving you a...
Well, I can't necessarily say that. We had red.
Okay.
We had red. And,
I saw...
You know, it depends what color blood you're is. You know, if you have red blood or green blood or yellow blood, or you know, just depends.
You sound like a politician, not willing to commit to either International or John Deere. I want to tell you about a sign I saw in a tourist shop the other day. It says, in fact, it was in the general store in Burr. That's where it was. There was a sign that read, "If it ain't red, leave it in the shed."
Yes.
Anyway, I'm just trying to make the point here that you were a farm kid, grew up on a dairy farm in Michigan.
Correct.
And when you were a farm kid, the biggest question of the day was, how many hours do I have to work and feed the cows and milk the cows? Then you grew up and you started to ask different questions about agriculture, which is the focus of what we're going to talk about today. What is your single biggest question about agriculture today?
Well, where has the farmer gone as far as losing their way, actually? That farming is supposed to be about producing food for people. And I see around the world that conventional agriculture particularly, but farmers as a rule have lost the understanding that they're producing food for people. Most of them feel, oh, they're just producing some commodity that gets sold down the road in a truck and they never see it again, and it never shows up in the form or even close to the form that they sold it. And so they've completely lost contact with the quality of that product relative to what its consequences are for the consumer.
The title of your book implies, the book Food Plague, it implies that our food is potentially not nourishing us. Rather, it could be damaging us in some way. Is that what the inference is?
Absolutely. And the medical literature out there is proving that. And it's actually kind of multifaceted. One way is that the food, because of its contamination and because of its alteration, is actually causing inflammation in the human and animal bodies. And in addition to that, it's creating an antigenic reaction, which would be an immune reaction that as well causes inflammation in the system. And as medical research has progressed, every chronic disease starts with inflammation of some type, whether it be cardiovascular disease, inflammation in the vessels, whether it be cancer, inflammation and overwhelming of the immune system and whatever organ it might be, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, any of those things, all inflammation in the gut. So the underlying issue is inflammation. And we know that in and of itself, inflammation can be the damaging thing. You add to that then the actual toxicities that are riding along with the food today, quote-unquote food, which has to do with the pesticides, particularly herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, in addition to the latest, of course, is the genetic engineering alteration, and the universal reaction of that is inflammation. You're putting in a foreign antigenic protein into that food product that stimulates inflammation. That is the consequence. And so inflammation gobbles up our antioxidants and gobbles up our trace minerals. And unfortunately, the food today, through both government testing and private testing, but particularly government testing, has shown we are anywhere from 15 to 76% less in nutrient levels today as we were 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Wow, that's a bombshell all by itself, that last 10 seconds. What is it you just said?
What we have is food today. You take a salad today, you analyze that salad, and it could be 10 different things in that salad. The amount of mineral that you find in that salad today compared to that same salad mix 50 years ago, and we're anywhere from 15 to 76% lower in minerals today in that same salad as we were 50 years ago.
Now, you're a rare breed there, Dr. Anderson. You know about the connection between soil, plants, animals, and humans. And this is something that Andy and I really don't talk about too much on the show. And I think it's crucial to get this message out to Andy's listening audience here. And this is essentially where you have your roots in your career, is by knowing about agriculture, understanding soil, soil science, nutrient density, and how that, as we move forward in the spectrum, that is what is so crucial in terms of human health.
Well, that's correct, Pam. And the problem that we have is people have missed, well, it's easy just to take a pill. And, of course, a huge industry has developed to, oh, don't worry about it, it's not your fault, all you have to do is take a pill. And the underlying issue to all of our health and disease issues is our diet and our lifestyle. But diet is the foundation of our lifestyle. And so it's not just about carbohydrates and proteins and fats, which is the typical dietitian or dietetics approach to that. It's what is the quality of those things? What's the mineral density of those things? What is the amino acid density? What and spectrum? What's the vitamin spectrum and density in those things? Because those are the building blocks that we utilize in order to clear our system, in order to heal our system, in order to maintain our system. And so that has to come from agriculture. And agriculture has completely dropped the ball.
Right. And in agriculture, of course, before, for example, World War II, the animals were outside on pasture and they were healthfully fertilizing the soil. Today, however, we have a bit of a disaster on our hands with regards to confining these animals where you have the manure lagoons. And unfortunately, those lagoons are heavily contaminated. So we've gotten so far away from doing what nature wants us to do in terms of preserving, maintaining healthy topsoil and how that translates to healthy food.
Well, we certainly have, and unfortunately, we didn't have to do that, and we don't have to do that in order to feed the world. There's this mantra out there by standard agriculture that says that, oh, we have to have all this technology in order to feed the world, and the reality is that all we're doing is poisoning the world, and we have lost 50% of our over 50% of our topsoil per the USDA. In North America as a result of this system. Well, that's not a sustainable approach. And not only that, if you look at yields over the past decades, the yields have leveled out. And we are not, and particularly when you look at the quantity of input that it takes, the kilocalories of input compared to the kilocalories of production, we're going backwards. And that's certainly not sustainable as well.
Now, just to dramatize how farming has changed in literally the last 40 years and how this impacts our food supply, Doctor, let me just make this comparison. When I was a kid, we lived on a 100-acre farm. Everybody did. Everybody had basically a 100-acre farm.
Sure.
And you could make a living. Next week, as soon as they begin harvesting wheat, I've been invited to join a friend west of London. Pete Dieleman is his name. Just getting to know him over the last few years. He has, get this, 23 100-acre parcels.
Yeah.
One of them, a couple of them a little larger. He farms 2,500 acres, but changing just as dramatically as the size of the farm, and this is where we get to the root of the impact of farming techniques today on our food, are all these other factors, the pesticides and the herbicides and the GMOs and Roundup. Let's take them one at a time. What are the, it's not so much the size of farming today, but the specific techniques that farmers are using. What would you put at the top of the list of things that farmers are doing today, which is having a harmful effect on our health?
Well, it's the use of pesticides. And what's happened is that it's become a crutch for poor farm management. And we have developed herbicide-resistant weeds as a result that are now becoming rampant around the world. Glyphosate is the most utilized herbicide around the world. And now there are, the last number I heard last year was 68 cultivars now that are completely resistant of glyphosate. And in addition to that, what people don't understand is prior to that, of course, atrazine was the most common one used. All of those products are chelators. And in fact, glyphosate or Roundup was originally patented back in 1962, I think it was, something like that, as a chelating agent. And what that means is a descaling agent for cleaning out boilers. And it does exactly that. That is the mechanism of action of how it hurts things. It disrupts nutrient availability, and particularly manganese, copper, zinc, iron, magnesium, calcium, and so on. And so it reduces the nutrient utilization in whatever plant, and unfortunately in humans as it comes through. So pesticides really is the most important thing because they're endocrine disruptors, so they in and of themselves directly tax the animal and the human that consumes them. Number two, what they have created is a farming system now with significant resistance both to herbicides and to other pesticides, and in particular antibiotic resistance, both in the soil and in crops, in animal operations, and then subsequently through into humans. Because what most people don't understand is that glyphosate is also an antibiotic. It was patented in 2010 by Monsanto as a antibiotic. So it's not just a herbicide, it's also an antibiotic. And what happens is by applying all these things over time, we end up with resistance. So MRSA, you've probably heard of that, methicillin-resistant staph aureus. Now one of the most common community-acquired infections that people get in the skin and so on. It's resistant to antibiotics. Why? Because of all of the excess antibiotic use. And so agriculture has set this up. Agriculture is the foundation of this disruption of our biological environment. And the second most important thing that I see that is destroying our food chain is now the genetic engineering of crops. Number one, we don't need them. There is no biological or economic need relative to feeding the population of the world that requires or needs genetic engineering.
Well, just hold that thought. We have to take a short break. Genetic engineering, GMOs, we've been just dying to ask you about this particular subject, what they're doing around the world, how that compares to what we're doing in North America, why we can't even get our governments to be honest enough to force companies to label their food products so we know what the heck we're eating. We'll be back with Dr. Arden Anderson, the farmer who went to school and is now raising questions about what we're doing out on the farm, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Now, most of you either have Macintosh computers operating systems or you have Windows operating systems, right? One or the other on your computers. You can take code, one bit of code from Windows, and you place that into the Macintosh or the Apple operating system, and the whole thing now is corrupt. But because it is foreign code, the entire code now is corrupt. The computer crashes, doesn't work. It's exactly what happens with genetically engineered crops.
The wizards in genetics are kind enough to propose a lot of reasons why I should believe in GMOs. It's not that I don't trust them, and I don't mean to be rude, but I still want the list of ingredients that they're putting in my food. I wanna know. They say it's to protect me, but the label never shows how many generations will be born with extra toes. It will take many years of tests to get the final scores. By then we'll look like the creatures in the bar scene of Star Wars. I wanna know.
Okay, one more chorus. Here we go.
I wanna know. And so, Mr. Monsanto, I may even try, when I'm really, really hungry, a fish with the head of a fly. If you say that it's so harmless, then you got nothing to lose. So why don't you just label it? I have the right to choose. I wanna know.
Okay.
I wanna know.
You know, there are things you don't know about Pam Colleen. You probably don't know she's a great tennis player and is going to a national tournament soon. There's a lot of things I could tell you about Pam Colleen, but one of the things is she has extraordinary taste in music, and that was one of the little parodies she sent me. I couldn't resist. Dr. Arden Anderson is our guest. Doctor, simple question. Why may we not know which of our foods is genetically modified?
Because it's too profitable at the present time to keep the public under wraps. And in the United States, at least, and in most countries, certainly greater than 50% but in many countries as much as 70 or 80% when they've done surveys of the consuming population would not purchase food that was labeled to have genetic engineered components. And so people vote with their dollars. And one fast way, the surest way to eliminate genetically engineered crops is for the public to vote with their dollars, and they will vote no.
That's right.
And if there's no money in it, the companies are not going to produce it. I mean,
that's
it's just
about
simple
the,
economics.
And it's not your fault, but that's about the craziest reason I can think of why you would not label something.
They're labeled in Europe, they're labeled in China, but they're not labeled here in North America. It's
right.
Crazy.
It is crazy. You know, if you had said, well, it makes no difference to the public whether the GMOs are not, so let's not bother labeling. But the fact that 70 to 80% of people would not buy the product, the food product, if they knew it was GMOs, is all the more reason why we need to label them.
That's
absolutely.
Right. And if it's such a great product.
Logically here, Andy.
Right.
Sorry?
You're speaking logically.
Well,
but if it's such a great product, then they should proudly have a label on the product, right?
Absolutely. And they say, oh, well, the public is not smart enough to make an educated choice.
Oh, my goodness. Let's go to the phones. Jim, you have a question about GMOs.
Yes, I have a question for the doctor. My question to the doctor is, well, what I'll do then is I'll plant my own garden. But I understand, doctor, that they've even altered the seeds, that they don't replicate. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. It's very difficult. They have what's called terminator technology, and what happens is that the seeds are infertile.
And right, exactly.
So you can't save your own seed.
And did you know that, Andy?
That keeps you dependent upon the seed company. So you have to make sure you get organic seeds and feed those seeds well and save some of your own seeds if you possibly can.
Exactly. You have to save your own seeds. And it's all about the money. They want us to be dependent upon their GMO food. So, yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Jim, I appreciate the call. Arden, is it just us? Aren't there some groups in America who've risen up in protest and lobbied Washington and say, you can't do this to us?
Well, there are a number of people out there and a number of small groups doing that. And the non-GMO project is one of those. And if you simply look at Whole Foods, Whole Foods was forced to start labeling in their store because of consumer demand and boycott. And yes, Whole Foods is not anywhere near the size of Walmart or Safeway or someone of that size, but they are discerning customers. And I forget how many stores they have, 360 to 400 stores in the U.S., and they were forced to label GMO versus non-GMO in their stores because people demanded it. They voted with their dollar.
Doctor, so, we're starting to see hopeful signs.
Yes.
I know of a woman in Hamilton, for example, who has a chain of organic food stores called Goodness Me. The popularity of them has just exploded. I think they have something like 5 in the Hamilton area, and they're planning 5 more in the Kitchener area. We've just had Farm Boy open up in South London in advertising now. Are we starting to get the message?
I think we are. And the bottom line is that, understand, farmers only have about 2% or less of the vote. And so the power is in the consumer, really. It's, you know, people worry about the big companies and whatever, and yes, they have a lot of money and a lot of advertising, but the bottom line is you and I vote every day at the grocery store or the restaurant with our dollars. That is where the power resides.
I want to ask you in just a moment about the poor farmers, because you're a farm kid, I'm a farm kid. We're not out here to mow down the farmers. They're locked into some economic realities, but I want to ask you about that in just a moment. But Greg has a question. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, hi, Andy and Dr. Anderson. I'd just like to start off by saying this is one of the topics these are the type of topics that we should be talking about every day on radio. Very important.
Go for it.
I wanted to add that I watched a documentary, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, called The World According to Monsanto. And basically, by the time you watch, I think it was a 2-hour documentary, that at the end of this documentary, it pretty much sums up that Monsanto wants to control his food supply. they've done some pretty underhanded things, and what they've done to the extent of going into Mexico, where there's about 200 different varieties of ancient corns, and they've sent people there, and literally what they were doing is just throwing their seed to mix it in to try to ruin these ancient breeds of corn. And so the local farmers are found out what was going on, and they reported it, and they traced back down to these Monsanto people. Another thing that I found interesting, you're talking about seed, where I guess they were buying up these seed extractors in the United States that wanted to eliminate all of them. There's only one farmer out in, I think it's Utah, that basically all the local farmers will take their corn to extract the seed, and they went so far as to sabotage his crops and wanted to take him to court, take away his whole farm, put him out of business because they were saying they were using his seed.
Greg, you're on the right trail, and it's a hot trail, and it's a long trail. I wish we had more time, but let me just bounce that one over to Dr. Anderson. Dr. Anderson, just pick up on what Greg is saying. Does Monsanto...
The seed issue is a major problem, and what we've seen commercially is that the GM industry, and so it's not just Monsanto, it's Bayer, it's
Syngenta,
Pioneer, it's a number of the companies out there, they have deliberately and sequentially purchased small seed companies as much as they possibly can, and with the point of tying up the genetics. And actually, the interesting thing is, and I have this from good sources of people who work with some of these companies, they then have destroyed any genetic material that outperforms the genetically engineered cultivars, so that they then can say, well, see, we outproduce anything else that's out there on the market. The bottom line is they don't. That's all a lie. And there are a number of small companies that see the light at the tunnel. Actually, some of these are former or recently retired USDA seed researchers who have started small companies to have non-GMO seed and proliferate that better genetic. So there is a movement afoot that is countering this, but of course you don't hear that in the news media.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, on the good side of everything, we do have a very strong grassroots movement. Mm-hmm. Both in the seed industry and the fertilizer industry and the farming industry, there are some great farmers out there at the grassroots level that are proving they can outproduce the GMOs, whether you talk corn, soybeans, canola, you name it, as well as regenerate the soils on through to the consumers who are gaining that information. So there's a good side to this whole thing as well.
Wonderful to hear. Greg, after you watched that documentary on Monsanto, you must have been chilled.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely shocking. This is systematically put in place. They're doing this. They got a plan, and they're going through with it. I'd just like to add one more thing, if I could. You're talking about fertilized spreading manure and things on the fields and that. Well, I was about 5 or 6 years ago, I was talking to a local farmer in my area. He farms 1,000 acres. And he told me every year there's trucks that are coming in from Toronto, and he's spreading human feces on the fields. It's treated somehow with a chemical. And I looked at him. I said, Frank, you got to be kidding me. He says, no, he brought me out to his field. He dug a big pit, and these trucks come in. And that explains the odor that I smell around here sometimes. And
it also explains a lot of spread of disease as well.
Exactly, and that's what I was saying to him. Says, well, it's no wonder we're getting coli in our lettuces and everything like that. You know, top crops and things like that. Like, it's just insane. If that's the only method they have to get rid of our waste, we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Greg, great call. Really appreciate it. Dr. Anderson, if we don't do anything as a society to address this whole issue, where are we going?
Well, we're really going down the primrose path of more and more disease. And actually, that's being borne out in our medical research. And particularly, we're seeing an infertility problem. More and more young people in their 20s and 30s, not just women, particularly men, are infertile. And in the developed world, and so that's North America, that's Western Europe. And so what is happening, what we're seeing is more and more difficulty in having children. In addition to that, we're seeing more chronic illnesses in young people. In other words, particularly digestive problems, more Crohn's, more ulcerative colitis, more asthma in teenagers and people in their 20s. I see that in the clinics. It's in the CDC research and statistics. We're seeing more and more of that problem in younger and younger people. And interestingly enough, medical research even says this generation is expected to live a shorter lifespan than its parents. That is devastating to society.
Now, how do you get people motivated to seek out more nutrient-dense, sustainable food? I mean, right now it's very seductive to go to a big store like Loblaws or Food Basics or whatever we have here in London, and the food is cheap and it's convenient. But how do you get people to be more motivated to support sustainable agriculture?
Very good question, Pam. I think there's really two things that I find. One is that they have to have some reason to do that. They have to have some motivation. And usually it's going to be a family or personal health issue that motivates them to look outside of the norm. Number two, you can't talk about how wonderful something tastes or how wonderful something is for you. You have to experience it. If I tell you that, oh my goodness, these peaches are so wonderful, they taste good, the texture, they're sweet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it means nothing to you. You're still hungry. You actually have to experience that peach before you really believe it. And that is where I see one of the biggest challenges, and that's why I am involved in agriculture, is because we have to actually produce this stuff. We are on small scale, and in different parts of the country, we can get it. But the problem is that it's not universally available, high BRICS, high nutrient-dense fruit, everywhere in the Western world.
Now, I'm familiar with the BRICS. I'm familiar with refractometers and so on.
Wonderful.
When I taste a really nutrient-dense piece of fruit or vegetable and I taste the flavor, I know it's going to be high in BRICS.
Yes.
But a lot of our listeners won't understand what that really means and how that translates to a healthier product. Not just a tastier product, but a healthier product.
Right.
Maybe you could explain
that. They've actually got to taste it first.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to convince somebody that they need to eat differently if their taste buds tell them, yes, I want to eat that way. And where the challenge becomes, if I as a physician tell you as a patient, hey, you need to eat this, 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 and this, and you go to the store, you purchase that product, take it home, and half of it is rotten by the time you eat it, and or it tastes bland, you can't get the kids to eat it. I'm going to have a much more difficult time in convincing you to continue that process than I would be if I can send you, get this brand, get that brand. What you're going to find out is that it's higher in BRICS, it's going to store longer, it's going to smell different, it's going to taste different, and after you eat it, your stomach is not going to be upset. That's really the overall process that is required, and that's what we're working towards. And if you're familiar with BRICS, as you said you are, you know yourself, if you eat a high BRICS apple, it's different than a low BRICS apple.
Absolutely.
As far as how you feel, how it tastes, and how long it lasts.
Doctor, let me jump in. Pam and I have often described on this show the tremendous mental issues that we have that we're facing out there. In fact, Pam, I give Dr. Anderson a snapshot of a study done in our schools about the mental.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, the teachers are saying that 28% of our children today have some kind of mental disorder. I mean, when you grew up, when I grew up, we just did not see this type of epidemic going on. Kids were pretty normal in our era.
So it's not just Crohn's disease and colitis and asthma and autism, but it's these mental disorders. And so the question is, how does the issue that we're talking about, a good nutrition, relate to that issue?
Well, it directly does. And there's a couple of very good studies. One gentleman, Dr. Carl Pfeiffer, he's dead now, but he was a psychiatrist, an MD psychiatrist, who developed the Pfeiffer Treatment Center in Illinois. And he proved in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that all mental illness is directly correlated to nutrition and is responsive to nutrition as well. And so it was very, very well documented. In Wisconsin, About 10 years ago, there was a parochial school. It took 3 years to convince the board, but they changed the diet in the school. This was a school of final stage rehab for kids. The next stage was they're going to be in prison. So these were kids who already were dropped out, already had drug problems, already had criminal records and so on, and learning disabilities. They completely changed the cafeteria, put in salads, put in vegetables and fruits in order to account all the soda pop, all the junk food and things like that. And what they found was is that their students completely turned around. Their grades came up. They had no more violence in the school. They had no more dropouts in the school. They didn't have any more mental health issues. It's well documented. In fact,
that's the Appleton study.
As a video.
Yeah, that's the Appleton study that Paul
stated. It has been proven in the school system that we can change these children and help them for the benefit of their mental health.
You're saying the principal, instead of taking the bad kid to the office for the strap, should take him for a good lunch.
That's correct.
That's right. I knew Paul Stitt, and that was remarkable. That was a very pioneering, very brave study that he did in Wisconsin.
Okay, why aren't we paying attention to it, Doctor?
Well, again, it comes back to federal politics and what's set up. In the United States, if you are receiving federal funding for your schools, you are obligated then to buy, quote unquote, federal food. In other words, packaged food from the federal government that goes into their predetermined lunch program. And most of that's junk relative to the way these kids' brain will develop. And so it's a real fight for the schools to get the school systems for the local people to get their school systems to buy local fruits, fresh fruits and vegetables.
Wow. Chris,
because of the federal politics.
Chris has a question. Go ahead, Chris.
I just had a quick question of why is it so much more expensive to eat organically and healthy? I bought 4 nectarines the other day. It cost me $12.
Yes.
Yeah, there's subsidies.
I don't understand how the price difference can be so much. And yet they promote it everywhere to eat clean and healthy now.
Doctor, go ahead.
A very good question. And it's really two answers to that. Number one, you should be getting what you pay for. And unfortunately today, not all organic is necessarily better. It can be, it should be. But from a nutrient perspective, a BRICS reading, it's not all that way. Some of the best and some of the worst produce on the market today has an organic label on it. So that goes back to farm management. That goes back to nutrient management on the farm. You've got some organic farmers that are organic by neglect, and you've got other organic farmers that are some of the absolute best farm managers you'll ever meet.
Chris, I appreciate the call.
But yet they still have their food is labeled organic.
How do you know then if you're buying something labeled organic if it's really organic?
Great question. What you're having to look at is smell, density. How heavy is it? You learn about that label as far as when you get it home. How long does it last on the shelf? How does it taste? What's the BRICS readings? Those kinds of things, so you can establish that.
Okay, we have to take
number two in the answer to his question. Why does it cost more? The bottom line is, if you're getting high BRICS food, it isn't more expensive. It actually is less because you won't have to eat as much, because that food is more dense, so you won't have to eat as much of it. And number two, your doctor bills will be less long-term.
We have just a couple of moments left. Dr. Anderson, let's do this. And I do this all the time. When I see a video of the average crowd on the sidewalk in America, I just look at it and go, wow, do we have health problems or what? I want to give our audience a takeaway. We have to take a short break. When we come back, I want you to wrap this up, put it in a little box, put a bow on it, give us a takeaway so that we can get the process started towards saving North America from a self-imposed meltdown because of bad nutrition. We'll be back with Dr. Anderson in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Hey.
scissors in genetics are kind enough to propose a lot of reasons why I should believe in GMOs. It's not that I don't trust them, and I don't mean to be rude, but I still want the list of ingredients that they're putting in my food.
Diane, you're going to have to be really quick with your question for Dr. Anderson.
What I want to know is, organic potatoes, I saw them yesterday for the, looking at them because of the price were so expensive of the others, and the potatoes were totally green, and I questioned that, and they said that's what organic potatoes are. They turn green. The light causes them to turn green. Are these potatoes safe to eat?
No, I probably wouldn't eat them. Unfortunately, a lot of people... they don't know any better because they've not been exposed to anything better. What I would suggest is that you pursue looking for a better quality potato.
Yeah.
You should organic should not have to apologize for aesthetics, taste, yield, or anything else.
Okay, Diane, we
just
have to leave it.
Because it's organic does not necessarily mean it's better. You have to look for a better quality product to begin with.
Dr. Anderson, we have 2 minutes left. Let's do it this way.
Okay.
1 minute for the problem that we're facing as a society when it comes to nutrition and food and chemicals and all the rest in Monsanto, then we'll get to the solution. What's the problem?
The problem is that we have a lack of nutrient density, and the nutrients are necessary for us to be able to fight off all of the onset insults of chemicals, et cetera, and be able to regenerate our body. So we have a lack of basic fundamental nutrition, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and so on. And how are we going to solve this? What's the takeaway message? First of all, we need to get educated about these things, about just the basic nutrition, about the correlation between that and our health or disease. Get educated about GMOs, what's really going on. The literature is out there. We don't need GMOs in order to feed the world. In fact, quite the contrary to that. Get educated about food quality, the BRICS reading, et cetera. Vote with your dollar. That is the most important vote that any of us cast anywhere. Vote with your dollar. And then do what you can today, what you can afford today, what you understand, but do something today about your health. Whether it's just drinking more purified water, whether it's getting a little more exercise, but do something today. And as you do something today, tomorrow is a little bit better day and you're more educated on how to improve it yet further.
I would like to announce a couple of websites people can look up for local producers in London doing what I would call authentic agriculture. Look up London Area Organic Growers, London Area Organic Growers, and you're going to find about a dozen great farms in the London area. And Dr. Anderson, do you have a website?
I don't have a website right off. I got Real Medicine, Real Health is, I don't really maintain it, but it's there. It gives us a little bit of general information people can go to. Acres USA is where I have several of my books, as well as O'BrienRx.com. O'Brien Pharmacy has a couple of my books as well.
And you have some wonderful online educational tools as well on YouTube, I believe, so people
yes,
can
ma'am.
See a lot of your PowerPoint presentations.
Dr.
There.
Anderson, we've come full circle. I'm a farm kid. For a farm kid who spent his early childhood mucking stalls with you-know-what on your boots, you clean up real well and make a heck of an argument why we need to pay attention to what we're eating.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, terrific.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Pam.
Okay, wrap it up, Pam. It's so important.
Well, I think we need to emphasize that these foods are in this region. We are so fortunate in London to have so many good farmers in this area. We can't take them for granted. There are some areas where I call deserts in Canada where you cannot find pasture-raised chicken, grass-fed beef, pastured pork, and we have all of these foods here in London, so we're very, very fortunate.
One thing they do not have just across the border in Michigan, water. Parts of Detroit have had their water cut off. There's a group of Canadians is going to march across the border today to bring them water, which they can't afford. It's an incredible story. We'll get into it right after the news update right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.